I begin this class with all sorts of mixed emotions. Some of the mixed emotions are by virtue of the fact that this is going to be our last class in Megillat Rut, and it's been already a number of times over the last number of years that I've taught it, and I never succeeded in getting beyond chapter 2. And I had really planned, this time I was going to make it through, so what we'll do today, I'm not sure because I have so much to say. That's number one. Number two, of course, the only other comments that, yes, we'll have to see what our new mayor is going to do for this great city. I have a great deal of sympathy for world leaders and others who'll have to learn a name like Lev Polyansky, which is not going to be easy. He most probably would be good if he would shorten his name. I think it was Rav Soloveitchik used to travel every week from Boston to New York and back. He made reservations every week. Could you imagine him having to make a reservation every week and tell the ticket agent, my name is Soloveitchik, Soloveitchik. He could have learned Shas in all the time it would have taken him to do that. So I think he became, for purposes of travel, he became Rabbi Solo. That's it. S-O-L-O, that was his name. That was so much simpler for everybody involved. I mean, I don't know whether he can be Lupo or Lopo or... One of his brothers is Lupo. I'm sure he can think... I mean, no, that's not good. Because it may sound like Lopo. And about Olmert, they always said about Olmert that he's Lopo. He wasn't here with the United States. So he has, Limor? No, he better come up with something else. Okay, that's my suggestion for the, no, he can change it. Give himself a real Israeli name. Pele. Lopo backwards. All right. That's number one. Okay, now to, we were, I think we sort of read till the end of chapter 2. Not to the end of Gimel. No. The end of Beis. You just saw the Gimel staring you in the face when we got to the end of Beis. I'll begin by trying to complete a number of things that I mentioned last week. I told you to watch a certain word that appears and reappears in chapter 2. I've underlined them here. They appear. The first time it appears in chapter 2, Pasuk 8. Verse 8. Vayomer Boaz al Ruth, Boaz said to Ruth, Halo shamad biti, you've heard my daughter. You can stay here, I'll tell chilul kot besadeh acher. Don't go to gather grain in any other field. V'gam lo ta'avuri mizeh, don't go away from here. V'chotid bakin im na'arotai, so you shall cleave with my girls. Okay, this word tid bakin appears another two times, if I'm not mistaken, toward the end of the chapter, 21, verse 21. Vatomer Ruth HaMoavia. Ruth HaMoavia is telling her mother-in-law, Gam ki omare lai, he said to me, Im hano'orim asher li tid bakin, with the young people who are with me and who are gathering the grain in the field, tid bakin, stick with them. Adin kilu et kol hakatzir asher li, until they complete the entire harvest. Vatoma Naomi el Ruth, Kalatam Naomi said to her daughter-in-law Ruth, Tov biti ki teitzim narotav, good that you should go out with his girls, v'lo yivgu bar besadeh achen, nobody will hurt you in another field. Vatidbak, the third time. She clung, she cleaved, she stuck with Na'arod Boaz, with the girls of Boaz l'lakeit, to gather the grain ad klot k'tzir ha'si'idim, Uktzir hachitim, until the end of the harvest of the barley and the wheat, Vateshev et kamota, and she remained with her mother-in-law. Right? Here, of course, just what we will need in order to go into the next parak is there's something about the chapter that ends on an unhappy note. Naomi had assumed that, look what happened. The first field she went into to gather grain is the field of our mishpucha, our family, Boaz. She thought that maybe Boaz would now take Naomi and Ruth under his wing and would do something. And day by day, she goes out into the field. She comes back after a whole day. And maybe the first few days, Naomi would ask her, well, Ruth, did anything happen in the field? Was Boaz there? Did you see him? Did he say anything? There's a sense of expectation. Something has got to happen. She wants something to happen. Can you imagine 3 months? And every day she comes back, most probably Naomi had already stopped asking her that anything happened. And a chapter that begins with such great expectations. Vihinei, she comes into the field and Boaz is there. It's the field of Boaz. Ruth doesn't know its significance. Maybe by now she does. But Naomi does and nothing happens. Nobody has taken any initiative to do anything. That's the introduction to the next chapter. We'll get back to that in a moment. What's the significance of the word tidbokin? That she clung, she stays there. Don't go away from here, he tells her. Cleave with my girls, with those in my field. Devek. That's right, Devek is glue. Devek is glue. Stick with us. So I have to recall that in the chapter before, one of the great declarations of Ruth to her mother-in-law is, your God is my God, your people are my people, whither thou goest, I goest. One of the great declarations in literature. And then she says, Rak hamavet yafrid beini ubeinech. Only death will separate, yafrid will separate between me and you. Only death. Until death do us part. There's a significance to that word, yafrid. The significance to that word, yafrid, it takes us back to Parshat Lech Lecha in Torah. When Avram has already entered Eretz Yisrael, he has gone down to Egypt. He returns from Egypt and both he and Lot have all sorts of cattle that are grazing and struggles begin to break out between the shepherds of Avram and the shepherds of Lot until it reaches a point where Avram says to Lot, "He pored no me olai, separate yourself from me." The significance of this separation cannot be underestimated, because what's happening with this separation is that what should be the ultimate goal and objective of history is now fading into the background. Because for there to be ultimate redemption for this world, it will require Mashiach, it will require the Messiah. Messiah is going to come from a union of the family of Lot and the family of Avraham. Ruth is going to be from Lot. And David is going to be from the family of Avraham. It's only when these two join is it possible for there to be hope of salvation for the world. I always try to imagine in my mind's eye the angels in heaven when they're listening to that conversation between Avraham and Lot, and Avraham says, "He pored no me olai, separate from me." The angels must have their wings flapping so wildly. They're looking for Valium. They're going crazy. They can't take the pressure and the tension. Because what's happening now is the ultimate fulfillment on the completion of the world is moving further and further away from reality. And it's going to take, is it another 1,000 years? Until on a dusty road, someplace between the fields of Moab and Bethlehem, that Ruth says to Naomi, Rak hamavet yafrid beini ubeinech. Only death will cause us to be separated. The Malachim haven't had a good night's sleep for 1,000 years until they hear Ruth saying, Rak hamavet yafrid beini ubeinech. But that's not enough. The Malachim need assurance. So you know what happens 3 times in this chapter? Boaz himself doesn't even know why he's saying it, but he says to her, Al tavuri mizeh, don't go away from here. Ko tidbokin, stick with me. And every time the Malachim hear this, they're of course upset that nothing's happening yet, but there it is. There it is. She's sticking with them. There's hope that the two will be joined together. By the way, there were many other times at which the angels went through terribly, terribly difficult times. Can you imagine when Lot is captured by the 4 kings? Do you know what's going on that night in heaven? If something happens to Lot, history is at stake. But of course, then the Malachim, the angels, watch Avraham Avinu and his 318 men ride out, the midnight ride of Avraham Avinu. He's out after them to save Lot. When he finally makes it and he saves Lot, the blood pressure of the Malachim goes back to normal. But wait a minute. It's an early morning in Sodom, and there are 2 angels who've been sent there to get Lot out. And it says, Vayo'itzu bo hamalachim, the angels hurried him, because they know if, God forbid, Lot is trapped in Sodom, history comes crashing down. It's, they see already by the dawn's early light, they are terribly nervous. Who else do you have over here? Gather everybody you have and let's go. His sons-in-law laugh at him, and then of course we know what happens with his wife, but the important thing is they get him out just in the nick of time. They're saving history. Wait a minute. And do you think Lot is the only one who causes the angels in heaven to have difficulty? And what happens when Yehuda says, take Tamar out and burn her at the stake? Tamar is carrying in her womb Yishai, Oved, David. She's carrying Peretz and Zarah in her womb. Can you imagine when they hear Yehuda say, take her out and burn her at the stake? I mean, I can't even describe the anguish of what's going on in there, until they hear maybe 2 of the greatest words in Tanakh, when Yehuda says, Tzodikah mimeni, she is right, she is pregnant from me. Do you understand what courage that took? The courage here is the great Yehuda who says, you know, we don't permit this kind of stuff over here. She's committed a terrible crime. She has to be burned at the stake. And then it turns out he is the guilty one. How many people would have the courage, the guts, the strength to utter such words of great truth? That's Yehuda. Tzadka mimeni. The Rav of Soloveitchik used to say that a king has to be one who struggles with the evil and the passion within him and ultimately emerges victorious. And that's why I'm saying this very quickly, but he basically said that's why if there was a choice, who should be king? Should kingdom of the Jewish people come from Yehuda or from Yosef, who certainly was a great administrator with a lot of experience? But Yosef was a tzaddik. Yosef was so righteous, he didn't understand truly the meaning of struggle, inner struggle. The one who's going to be the king of Israel has to be the one who knows what it means to battle with the evil inclination and ultimately to succeed. So
for 1,000 years, the angels have had an extremely difficult time. And now in chapter 2, finally, Boaz and Ruth are together, and he says, you remain here, but just like Naomi, nothing's happened. Nothing has happened.
Yes.
The two children that are born to the two daughters of Lot after they had relations in the cave are Ammon and Moab. Moab is the name of his grandson. So the Moabites are all the direct descendants of Lot. And of course, Jews are the direct descendants of Avram. And these two have to be brought to bear. That's the chemistry that's going to create Mashiach. So when there is 1,000 years at which they're separated, it means the hope for a successful culmination to history recedes from view. But now, in the fields of Bethlehem, we have the two who may very well be the ones, if they're going to make it, they're going to make it. They're going to be the ones who will create the successful end of all of history. But nothing has happened. So therefore, per chapter 3, I'm going to move quickly now. Just better hang on to your seats. Tatomelo Naomi Hamosa, Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, Biti, halawavakeishloch manoach asher yitavloch. By the way, this is an extremely difficult conversation. Because what Naomi is going to suggest now is going to be so revolutionary. Not only is it going to be revolutionary, it's going to call for something that becomes close to arrogance, chutzpah, and even only a fine line separates it from terrible impropriety. She's going to suggest to Ruth to go down to the threshing floor during the night and there come to Boaz in order to awaken and arouse in him a feeling toward her so that he should want to marry her. You have to remember something else. He's much older than she is. He is much older. Is there divine guidance over here every step of the way? I mean, what kind of shidduch is she finding for Ruth? Ruth is a relatively young, beautiful woman, and Boaz is toward the end of his life. You look like you want to ask something. I like exactly what you're saying. There's something, and this is also one of the, I can't go into that now, but if you just take a look at the whole story of Malchus, based off of the kingdom of the house of David, there's always this skirting the outer, or maybe even close to the inner areas of that which seems to be clearly improper. And David and Bathsheba, Yehuda and Tamar, Lot and his daughters, even Boaz and Ruth. There's something about it that God works in such strange and magnificent ways. And what we have to do is try to understand, and if we don't understand, we simply lift our hands and say, this is divine wisdom. Yes. Boaz, the day that they arrived in Bethlehem 3 months earlier, the Gemara says, was the day of the funeral of Boaz's wife. Not only that, the Gemara says that they had 60 children. 30 boys. I don't know whether it was one wife. It doesn't say. He had 30 boys and 30 girls. V'kulan metu b'chayov, and all of them died in his lifetime. Do you know what Boaz remains? Boaz, who had such a magnificent family, do you know what? he remains alone. Huh? Well, sleeping in the threshing floor is not because he's a wealthy man. He's a wealthy man. He's sleeping in the threshing floor because that was the ceremony of the threshing. It's not because he doesn't have a 5-star bedroom. You have to understand that Naomi is like walking on eggs. She's going to suggest something to Ruth which may seem very improper. I want rest for you that will be good for you. Boaz, our friend, our family, that you are with his girls. Behold, he is threshing the barley tonight. Wash yourself for sacht and put on perfume. Visant simlotayach, put on your beautiful garments, alayach upon you. Viyadadit, and go down into the garden. Alti vadi leish, don't let anybody know you're there. Ad kalotola echol lishtot, until he's finished eating and drinking. Now, something fascinating, of course, in this pasuk, there are three words that are written one way and read another way. Go down, virachatz, wash, vasacht, the sant, put on your garments, is read the santi, and I will put on my garments. Simloteich, simloteich, viyoraditi, I will go down, but we read it viyoradit. In a sense, what this is telling us is that Naomi wants her to know, I'm with you all the way. It's like me making all of these preparations. All of my hopes and my prayers and my best wishes go with you every step of the way. And come to pass when he lies down, you will know the place where he's going to lie down. Uvot, you should come. The gilet margalotav, reveal, I imagine, the blanket from his feet, the shachavt, and lie down at his feet. Vahu yagid lach et asher ta'asin, and he's going to tell you what you should do. You know how difficult this is? So difficult for her. And you know what Ruth's response is? Kol asher tomri elai e'eseh. Whatever you tell me, I'm going to do. You know who I feel? If we want to understand what's going through her mind, I have this feeling all the time when I come to the parasha of Rivka telling Yaakov to go take 2 goats and bring them to her and prepare them and go into your father and say your Esav and rob him blind of the brachot. Yaakov says, I'll do whatever you say. I'll do whatever you say means that this is extremely difficult for me. Everything within me revolts against it. But I'm going to do it. Huh? Kol asher tomri. Yeah, but there you understand, Yitzhak didn't want to do it, and if not for the fact that God told him, whatever Sarah tells you, listen. But by Yaakov, there's nobody to tell him what to do. It's only that Rivka tells him, and it's difficult for him, but he does it. And whatever you say to me, I will do. She went down to the threshing floor. Do you understand? When the pasuk repeats, she did everything that her mother-in-law commanded her, then you know that there's only one thing motivating her. Not her own desires, not her own interest. The one motivation is this is what her mother-in-law commanded her to do, and she's going to listen to her mother-in-law. Vayochel Boaz, Boaz ate, vayeshed, and he drank, vayitavli bo, and his heart was good, vayavo lishkav, miktzei ha'arimah, and he came to lie down at the edge of a pile of grain, vatavo balot, and she came in the darkness and the silence, vatagal margalotav, and she revealed his feet, and she lay down there, margalotav, by his feet. Vayehi b'chatzi ha'layla. Vayehi b'chatzi ha'layla. If you think that these three words are not significant, all of the great things that happened to the Jewish people, the great historic moments were B'chatzi HaLaila, in the middle of the night. Avram went out to save Lot, B'chatzi HaLaila. Jews go out of Egypt, B'chatzi HaLaila. The forces of Assyria are destroyed around the city of Yerushalayim, B'chatzi HaLaila. Gidon destroys the camp of Ammon, everything. Vayehi B'chatzi HaLaila, Vayecherad HaIsh, Vayilafet, the man trembled, Vayilafet, and it's like he started shaking. Vihinei, and we've pointed out a number of times already, what does the word Vihinei mean? And behold, surprise, surprise, this is a real surprise. Vihinei isha shochevet margolotav, there's a woman who's sleeping by his legs. Vayome, he said, mi atu ayu vatome, anochi rut amotecha, I'm rut, your maidservant, to foras knofecha alamatcha, you should spread your wings over your maidservant, ki go el ata, because you are a redeemer. One of the important things that has to be pointed out about Sefer Rut, there is no other Sefer like Rut that gives you a picture of living Torah. Torah as it was lived. We have over here a picture of harvesting the grain. We have the picture of the poor coming into the field, what they're permitted to harvest and what they're not permitted to harvest. There is a halach in Torah that says that if a member of family died or a member of the family had to sell his ancestral holdings, other members of the family should redeem it and keep it in the family. So she is telling him there is a biblical obligation. You are the redeemer. And he said, Berucha at Lashem Piti, may you be blessed before God. My daughter, Heitavt Chazdecha Achron Min HaRishon, your great kindness, this kindness is greater than all of your previous kindnesses. Levilti lechet acharei habachurim. He understands already. It doesn't take him long to understand. As a goel, as a redeemer, as a member of the family, it becomes his responsibility not only to redeem the fields that belong to Machlon, Chilion, and Elimelech. There's another responsibility, and that responsibility is to marry the widow. What is coming to the fore over here is the idea of Yibum, the levirate marriage. By the way, the first time it appeared was when Tamar marries one of the sons of Yehuda and he dies, so who marries her? The brother. When the second brother dies, who is the one that's going to, who marries her? Or she should be given to the third. And because she's not given to the third, she goes out there on the crossroads, and she lives with Yehuda. The Ramban, Nachmanides, says that one of the great secrets of Torah is the idea of Yibum, the levirate marriage. Because what Torah says over here is the following. If there are two brothers, one marries, he dies, no children. Under other circumstances, a brother may not marry his brothers, his sister-in-law. Can't make it. It's a terrible crime to do that. And Torah takes this crime and turns it into a mitzvah if there are no children. And the Ramban refers to this as one of the great secrets of Torah. And you know who knew of this secret first? Yehuda knew of this secret. And in its secret dimension, it doesn't necessarily have to be a brother. It can be some other member of the family. So he says, what you've done, that you've come to me, you could have gone after any of the boys. Any one of them would have wanted to marry you. Now, my daughter, don't be afraid. Look at the way it works. All of a sudden, Boaz is saying, whatever you tell me, I'm going to do for you. You understand? You know what's happening now. Number one, what has taken place at the beginning of the chapter is nothing was happening. We talked about it last week. When nothing happens, somebody has to take the initiative. In chapter 2, it was Ruth who takes the initiative and she says, I'm going to go out into the fields. At the end of chapter 2, Boaz is not taking the initiative. So Naomi tells Ruth, you go. And you awaken in him an understanding that he has a responsibility. So he says, whatever you say, I will do. Ki yodea kol shar ami. Cinder something, he's now telling her something that gives us a picture of the impact that this root had on everybody around her. All of the people in the gates of my nation know ki eshet chayalato, that you are a woman of valor. Ve'ato ki omnam ki goel anochi, however, even though I am one of the family who's a redeemer, there's somebody else who is closer in family, and we're going to have to find out if he wants v'gam yeshet goel korek v'mene, there's somebody's closer. Lini halayla, stay here overnight v'hoya v'boker, and it will come to pass in the morning im yig'ol chotov yig'ol. Im Yigol Chotov, Chazal say the name of the other redeemer, the other member of the family, his name was Tov. Im Yigol Chotov, Yigol. If Tov will redeem you, let be redeemed. Vim lo yachpots ligo'olech, and if he will not want to redeem you, ugaltich onochi, I will redeem you, Chai Hashem, I swear by God. Shich v'yad ha'boka, lie here until morning. One of the great Kabbalah interpretations of this pasuk is so gorgeous. Jews should mend their ways. If we do tshuva, redemption will come. Big question is, what happens if Jews don't do tshuva? Will redemption come? This is a big difference of opinion in the Gemara. Rabbi Eliezer says there can only be redemption with tshuva. Rabbi Yehoshua says to him, and if Jews are not going to repent, so there won't be redemption? This fashlugana world can go on into eternity under those circumstances. So therefore Rabbi Yehoshua says, no, there's a time. There's a time that God will bring redemption regardless of whether we are worthy or not. So therefore, if anybody questions, could we be now in a process of redemption? I mean, we're not so good. The truth is, we are pretty good. With all the complaints, you know, we Jews are rougher on ourselves than others. We're pretty good people. There are a lot of bad people in this world. Nobody disagrees. Good. Good. So, Chachmah, I think it's the Zohar Chodosh, the new Zohar, that says the following. Im yigalech tov. If your redemption will come because you're good, you're going to mend your ways, you go, then you're going to be redeemed. Vim lo yachpots legalech, but if you're not good, and one may not want to redeem you, Chai Hashem Onochi Galticha. God says, I swear, even if you're not good, I'm going to redeem you. O Galticha Onochi, I will redeem you for my name's sake, swears God. What a beautiful pshat in the pasuk. Not so bad. Even though things are, in fact, very bad. But I don't know. I go from 1 hour I'm depressed, and the next hour, you know. All right, we're not going to. Batishkav Margalot Hav Adaboke. She lay by his feet until morning. Batokom, and she got up. Beterem Yakire Shetreu, before anybody can recognize anybody else, so that she'd be able to slip out of the Gonan. Vayoma, and he said, Ayivoda Kibor Isha Hagoran. Nobody should know that a woman came into the threshing floor. Vayoma, and he said, Havi Hamit Pachat Asher Olayich, bring the tichel or the whatever it is that you have on you, ve'echaziba, and held on to it, v'atochel, but she held it, and he measured out six sa'orim, six kernels of barley, v'yoshet aleh, and he placed it upon her, v'yavo ha'ir, and came to the city. Hu v'yavo ha'ir, and what are the sheish sa'orim? Oh, God, I think we're going to leave that for next year. Vatovoel Chamalta, she came to her mother-in-law, Vatome, and she said, Mi ad biti. Who are you, my daughter? What a strange thing. There are two ways, I have two ways of understanding this question. She left when you still couldn't recognize anybody, so maybe she arrives home and it's still dark so that She doesn't know who it is. I have a feeling that there's much more to this pasuk. If you recall back the first year, we learned the Gemara, that the Gemara says that David is on his way out to wage war with Goliath. And Shaul says, "Ben mi zeh ha'elem, whose son is that boy?" And the Gemara's question really was, he doesn't know who the boy, this is the boy who's been playing the harp for him. How doesn't he know? So one of the pshatim is, there's a halo of royalty about him. As he sees David walking out, he doesn't see a little baychik walking out. He sees somebody of great stature. And he doesn't know, is this the David that I know? I have a feeling when she walks in that morning, Ruth may not know it, but that's the day. That's going to be the day on which everything happens. She walks in that morning, and there's an air of royalty. There's a divine presence around her. There's a blinding, flashing light that envelops her. And her mother-in-law, it's not the same Ruth that she sent that evening down to the Goren. It's a completely different Ruth. Because you know what Ruth is going to become on that day? The Gemara's great description of Ruth. Ima shel Malchut, the mother of royalty. That's what's going to happen that day. A mother of royalty is not the same. It's not Ruth ala Biti that walked out that morning and came back, walked out earlier that evening and came back in the morning. It's a completely different person. Vatagid lo, and she told her at Kol Asher Osa lo Ha'ish, everything that the man did. Vatoma, Sheish Sonim Ha'ela Natan li, he gave me these three kernels of six. Good. I need you. Ki Oma, because he said to me, Al Tavoi Reikom El Chamotech, don't come empty-handed. So I'll tell you what the Gemara says about these six kernels. The Gemara asks, is that what a man gives? You know, six little kernels. I mean, it's a miracle that she didn't lose them. So the simple pshat, of course, is that it was six measures of Sodim. Because it says that she carried it. But the Gemara says that he prophetically told her that there are going to be six great people who are going to come from you. And the Gemara says who these six great ones that are going to come from her. And then there's another pshat that Mashiach is going to come from her, who's going to be blessed with six blessings. He's going to have Ruach Chochma, a spirit of wisdom, Bina, understanding, Eitzah, counsel, Gvura, might, Ruach, the spirit of God, Ruach Dat, V'yirat Hashem, and fear of God. All right. Anyway, she said, Al Tavoi Reikom El Chamotech, don't come empty-handed to your mother-in-law. What do you have to think about immediately over here? What was the end of chapter 1 when they asked Naomi returns and they ask her, Naomi, what happened? So she said, don't call me Naomi. Call me Mara, call me bitter. Because Meleya Halachti, I left full. V'reikam Heshivani Hashem. God brought me back empty handed. And he says to her, don't come back to your mother-in-law empty handed. Your mother-in-law is never going to be empty again. Atoma, Shvi Biti, so she, Naomi said, sit down, my daughter, Arashet Tedin Eki Poldavar, until we know how things will happen. Ki lo yishkota ish, ki in ki lo hadavar hayom, the man is not going to remain silent until he completes it that day. And the fact is that he does complete it that day. And we're not going to learn chapter 4. But we are going to spend a few minutes on the big question that I think we asked in the first year, but we didn't really answer it. Why is the book of Ruth read on Shavuot? Okay, that's the kind of question that everybody, we have to deal with, and we cannot complete these shiurim and turn off the film or the tape recorders until we will at least have gone through that. First of all, on a very simple level, everything that takes place in Ruth, it's really a story of 3 months. The heart of the story is 3 months. And the heart of the story is harvest time. Harvest time. How many times does the word katsir appear here? It's the harvest of the barley. It's the harvest of the wheat. What is Chag HaShavuot, the holiday of Shavuot, called? It is Chag HaKatsir. It is the holiday of the harvest. You also have to remember something else, which fits into this as well. It's also the time at which people are going to prepare the bikur and the first fruits. What took place on Shavuot? On Shavuot, a man would bring the first fruits to the Beit HaMikdash, and he would say the story of Jewish history, Arami Oved Ovi, the Aramean wanted to destroy my father, and we went down to Egypt, and we were suffered there, and the whole story of Egypt until Jews come out of Egypt, God brings them to this land, and he says, and man declares, we thank you for the land that you gave us, Va'ata, and now behold, I have brought the first fruits. Shavuos is the yontif of the first fruits. So here, the yontif of Shavuos is so much of an agricultural yontif. And here we see agriculture and living halacha before our eyes. Second, Ruth is the story of converts, conversion. What was the experience at Sinai? The experience at Sinai, when Torah was given at Mount Sinai, this was an experience of conversion. Entire Jewish people, they all had to, before they left Egypt, all the men were circumcised. Everybody washed themselves and cleansed themselves before Torah is given at Sinai. Everything taking place over there is all part of the process of the Jewish people becoming Mamlechet Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh, a kingdom of priests, V'Goy Kadosh, and a holy nation. We always have difficulty, and it's natural, we always have difficulty relating to big numbers. I have no better example than this. You talk about 6 million Jews destroyed in the Holocaust. All right. Terrible. Then tell the story of one Jew. Precisely what he went through. A book about it. A movie about it. And you know what will happen? You will become so involved and focused on this one person, his or her suffering, and all of a sudden the enormity of it strikes you. We can't relate to big numbers. But you know what we can relate? We can relate to the painful process of one young woman making her way to Judaism. Oy, we get to know this Ruth. We can begin to feel what it means to leave a home and a birthplace. And not only that, to leave opulence and wealth and begin a journey that she has absolutely no idea where this journey is going to end. It may end in great tragedy. She doesn't have a clue. She has absolutely no way of knowing. Then add to that, not only is she leaving home, not only is she joining a new people, she's also coming on Aliyah. Aliyah is enough to break the best of us. Go add that. All the other new things, there are so many upheavals in her life. So many upheavals. And then when she finally comes, do you think anybody is there to say, Baruch Haba, Heivenu Shalom Aleichem, welcome, Ruth? Not a word of welcome. You know how painful it is. You know how difficult it is. And here she's from this opulent home. And now she's going to join the poor out in the field in order... It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable what this woman goes through. And when you focus on the story of one person, you can achieve some kind of an understanding of what the process of conversion, which Christ all went through, Jewish people went through at Sinai. You say that 2 million Jews, 2 million Jews converted. We can't understand. We can't grasp it. We can't grasp. But one story, and this one story, of course, is the story of what took place at Sinai. Somehow or other, I was also working on another idea that I don't think I made it all the way to the end. So, you know, I can leave the dangling participles with you, do it whatever you want. In a sense, in this book of Ruth, two mountains join. There are two mountains that rise above all of Jewish history. Mount Sinai and the Temple Mount. Mount Sinai and the Temple Mount. Torah is Mount Sinai. David is the one who is going to represent the whole idea of the Temple Mount. He's the one who purchases it. The Temple Mount. Oh, when David pays for it, do you know what David is able to say? Har habayit biyadeinu. The Temple Mount is in our hands. And ultimately, with Ephraim, remember, does Mount Sinai have any sanctity? We don't even know where Mount Sinai is. The truth is, we don't even care where Mount Sinai is. And Torah says it quite clearly. The sanctity of Sinai was only as long as the divine presence was there. When God comes down upon the mountain and we hear the voice of God issuing forth, I am God, your God, who took you out of the land of Egypt. As long as God is on the mountain is holy. The moment that the divine presence rises from the mountaintop, it's a mountain like all other mountains. Nothing differentiates Sinai from any other mountain. Not so Mount Moriah. When David purchases it and he sanctifies the mountain, that mountain remains holy until the end of time. Mount Sinai gives way to Mount Moriah in the book of Ruth. Here is Ruth, who is experiencing Sinai, and she's going to become the mother, the grandmother of David HaMelech, who brings us the ultimate sanctity of all, which is Har HaBayit. Har HaBayit. I mean, somebody better tell this to our government too, you understand. Somebody better tell it to our government. Somebody had better even tell it to our new mayor, who was quoted in the Jerusalem Post last week, as not knowing that the Jews are not permitted up on the Temple Mount. One of the terrible, terrible crimes of Israeli governments for 36 years. And you know, I'm a big patriot, you understand. Me, I pledge allegiance to the State of Israel and nearly everything for which it stands. All right? Except who? Well, yeah, but aside from the news, I understand. Any non-Jew in the world can go up on the Temple Mount. The only ones who can't go up on the mountain are Jews. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Now I'm getting upset. I'm getting upset. And take a look. Yeah, I mentioned before. In Aqaba, there are three flags flying, and not the fourth. There's no Israeli flag flying. Why is Sharon going there? Why doesn't Sharon say, I'm not coming unless you Israeli, what are we? We let the world trample on us. I don't understand. I don't understand what's going on. Unless, of course, Sharon thinks that the flag is nothing more than a shmata. You understand? So who needs the shmata? the rag flying off. What's going on over here? I'll never finish if I get into this. The book of Ruth is a book that is drenched with kindness. Chesed is the key word. There's a Gemara that says this Megillah has nothing of halachic content, but you know what it all is? It's all kindness. The way in which Ruth and Orpah deal with Naomi and with the dead Elimelech, Mahlon, and Chilion. I mean, the way Ruth, her chesed toward her mother-in-law. Ultimately, Boaz, I mean, everybody's going to become enveloped in this whole relationship of kindness. When the ice is broken, a great deal of warmth emanates from Sefer Ruth. And the Gemara says about Torah, it's the Yontif of Torah. Torah is Tchiloso Gemilas Chasadim Vesofo Gemilas Chasadim. The beginning of Torah is kindness, and the end of Torah is kindness. God creating man, God making garments for Adam and Chava, God at the end of Torah burying Moshe Rabbeinu. All of these are great acts of kindness, and everything in between, all of Torah is acts of kindness. Torah is acquired through suffering. That's what Reb Shimon ben Yochai says, three great gifts that were given to the Jewish people, and all of them were given only through suffering. Torah, Eretz Yisrael, and Olam Haba. Torah is acquired through suffering. And as we said, we watch this suffering as the Ruth goes through it. Maybe one of the most significant achievements of the Sefer Ruth is that we believe with perfect faith that two Torahs that are one were given at Sinai. The written Torah and the oral law. And they were given together. Very difficult to understand the written law without the oral law. Where are these two, written law and oral law, where do they become one? In this book, the whole Sefer of Ruth is based on one idea. That there was a halacha, a law that had come from Sinai saying that only the males of Ammon and Moab may not enter the congregation of God. Ammoni velo Ammonit, but not the females. Females are permitted. All of, even Moshiach, everything depends on this halachic position, which is clearly from Sinai. So in this Sefer, we are saying that on Shavuos, not only did we receive the written Torah, but we also have the oral Torah that is embedded in this book of Ruth. I think that the written Torah requires the elaboration and the elucidation of the oral law. Of course, all of the Mefarshim say that Shavuos is the Yomtif of David HaMelech. It's the holiday of David. David was born on Shavuos. David died on Shavuos. And the book of Ruth, of course, is the genealogy of David HaMelech. I think we pointed out in the first year that there's all of history is summed up in the name of first man, Adam, Aleph, Dalet, Mem. Those are the three letters that make up the name Adam, and they stand for Aleph is Adam, Dalet is David, and Mem is Mashiach. That is the whole, there you have the whole thread of history, starting with first men until ultimate salvation. And then an idea that we had said earlier, and really there is no other book of the Tanakh like Sefer Ruth, where you see living Torah. It's amazing. You see Torah alive and well, be it the law of Yibum, levirate marriage, be it the law of redeeming land that a family had sold and bring it back to the family. The idea of amoni below amonis, moavi below moavia, leket, shikha, peya. Maybe one final comment, a statement of the rabbis. If you take a look at the, in chapter 4, we're not going to learn all of chapter 4, we can learn at least learn one pasuk in chapter 4. And by the way, I haven't even touched all the laws of acquisition that appear in chapter 4. How a deal was struck in ancient Israel, what manner of ceremony was done in order to purchase and acquire something. But there's also an unusual pasuk. The unusual pasuk is chapter 4. All right, I'm getting there. After he marries her, pasuk 13. Vayikar Boaz et Rut. Boaz took Rut, vatehi lo leisha, and she was unto him as a wife. Vayavo eleha, and he came to her. Vayitain Hashem lo heirayon, and God gave her pregnancy. Vateled ben, and she gave birth to a son. Obviously, a phrase like that is highly, highly unusual in all of Tanakh. There's something Christological about the idea of God gave her pregnancy. So the Gemara says the following. The Gemara uses it in a different context, but I will explain it in our context. There's a numerical value to the word heirayon. Let's figure it out. Heirayon. So, you know, I always have to start with the big numbers. If I start with the little numbers, I get lost. A resh is 200. A nun is 50. So we have 250. Okay? Then we have a yud, which is 10. That's 260. Then we have a hey. That makes it 265. And then we have a vav, which is 6, 271. She was pregnant for 271 days, and then she gave birth. That's precisely 9 months. What's so significant about this? What's significant about it is the following. The day after the wedding of Boaz and Ruth, Boaz dies. If she would have been pregnant 272 days, then there would be a cloud over the house of David and Mashiach forever. Maybe the child is not from the house of David. By virtue of the fact that she gives birth precisely 271 days after the wedding, it's clear that the father was Boaz. Didn't we say earlier that there's something always hovering over the house of David? Like, here it is, huh? All right, let's say it's not clear, but let's say the following. You can't say it was somebody else. And the precision birth by Yitain Hashem Lahay Heirayon. We do have to explain the meaning of the phrase. We do have to explain it. And the Gemara uses the gematria, but in a different context. That, in other words, it means that there is the entire house of David and Mashiach hangs on a thread. Lot captured, Lot coming out, being dragged out of the city of stone. Tamar on her way to be burned at the stake. There's something about it. Always hanging on a thread. But you know what it means, hanging on a thread? There's a God Almighty who watches over the house of David. Don't for a moment think that David and Mashiach are self-made people. There is a God who watches, and even at the moment when angels would fear to tread or be there, there's a Rabbeinu Shem who's watching. And what it means is that we believe with perfect faith. We believe with perfect faith that we know exactly how history is going to end. We know exactly how history is going to end. There will not be one inch of this country that will be Palestinian country. There's no question about it. This is all going to be ours. That's what it says in the Bible. That's what it says in Torah. There's no doubt about it. It's all narrative. It's all fantasy what's taking place. It can't be map. Torah tells us exactly where we're going. But not everybody out there, they don't have a clue. They think they're going one way. You know, I always wait for the... I've always said this. I said this so many times. Number one, God has a tremendous sense of humor. Tremendous sense of humor. I mean, even a sense of humor may be... I don't know what Tommy Lapid is doing today, but, you know, those who want to crush the Haredi community, you know, all of a sudden the Haredi community, you know, takes over the city of Yerushalayim. I mean, I'm sure God must be sitting up there and laughing a little bit. Okay, Tommy Lapid, what do you think is going to be? There's so many things that happen. And we think we're going in one direction, or there are those who want to lead us in a particular direction. The only direction we're going to go in is the one in which God is going to take us. The only thing is, why does he have to take the neshama out of us? In other words, why do we have to suffer not knowing where things are going? But what the ultimate end is, signed, sealed on the bottom line. No question about it. We know exactly what's going to be. All right, he also may be God's will that he should take over. I wouldn't mind if he would take over and have a great Yontif and have a nice Yontif.